Good morning. First argued case this morning is number 182236, In Re Inn at St. John's. Mr. Ragdoll.
Good morning. May it please the court. There are two main issues in this case. The first is the board's failure to apply the 13th DuPont factor or to even correctly apply its own strategic partners test. The second is its overemphasis on the generic and literal elements of the marks without giving due weight to the visual differences in the two marks. The primary issue, and I believe the key to this case, should be the failure to apply the 13th DuPont factor or to correctly apply the strategic partners test.
Okay, can I ask you, we're not bound by strategic partners, right?
That's true, Your Honor.
We could either decide strategic partners is right, and then we could say if the board failed to follow it, that is a reversible error. Or if we don't think it's necessarily right, there's just a general APA obligation to address something that the relevant agency here, the board, previously did and say, here's why we are either repudiating it or distinguishing it. And it certainly did the latter, right?
I think that's right, Your Honor. And I've searched for, you know, Federal Circuit doctrine on the 13th factor that might apply here, and there really isn't a whole lot. So we are left with, in terms of, you know, existing law on this subject, what the board has decided in strategic partners in other cases. But you're certainly right that if the court wishes to, you know, write more on this subject, it could. Although I think all you really have to do here is look at the fact that they said they would apply their own test, strategic partners, and then they failed to do it correctly. I mean, they didn't apply their own test because they compared the wrong marks.
So I understand. Has this court ever commented on the aversion of strategic partners, the origin of it, which is something called Morehouse?
So there is case law from this court about Morehouse, although Morehouse only applies in inter partes proceedings, so it doesn't technically apply here, although it is related in that I do think if this had been a proceeding between St. John's and OTG, and hypothetically, if OTG had filed an opposition or cancellation, Morehouse applies in either.
So wasn't there a Federal Circuit case called OM Bread or something like that?
Yes, there is.
That talked about Morehouse?
Yes,
right.
There is. I have the citation for that. If court needs it a little bit.
From what I remember reading in OM Bread, the idea is what we're trying to figure out is whether the opposer in a trademark opposition, and I guess here it would be the prior registrant for Five Stake, whether they would be any further injured by the registration of this new mark compared to the earlier mark that you already have a registration on.
So
then the question is, okay, the inquiry has always been, okay, is there any colorable difference between what you had before, I guess, for Five Restaurant, and now you have something called Five Steakhouse that you want a registration on.
Right.
But it seemed like the question was, well, would there be any delta of injury to the other registration? And here that's Five Steak.
So I think you're close, Your Honor, although I think I would put it this way. When I think about the Morehouse defense and how it might apply in this case, it would actually be if OTG, who owns the Five Steak registration, the one that was cited against our updated application for Five Steakhouse, if they had opposed our application, St. John's would have a very strong Morehouse defense, and I think would win on it because OTG could not claim any further injury because we already have Five Restaurant, which is virtually identical to Five Steakhouse. So St. John's would prevail because OTG would not be able to say they have any colorable injury to claim because we already have a registration for Five Steakhouse.
Well, that's the inquiry that we have now. And this is the the board basically addressed that very inquiry here and disagreed and found that no, what you're trying to do with this new application for a trademark is different enough from your older registration that essentially it would cause a further injury to Five Stake.
That's not quite what they said.
It's not quite what they said, but that's basically the thrust of the inquiry in the sense that they said, okay, you want to delete restaurant, you want to say steakhouse, five steakhouse, and ooh, we see we have this other registration on our register called five steak. And so this is, you've really migrated into a zone that's closer to five steak by moving away from five steakhouse, five restaurant, and moving to, trying to move to five steakhouse.
So here's where they made their legal error. And it came right at the moment when you said, ooh, that's when they made their legal error, because the comparison between five restaurant and five steakhouse should have happened in a vacuum. They said five steakhouse moves closer to the OTG mark. That's not the question. The question is, are five restaurant and five steakhouse substantially similar? Do they create the same commercial impression? And the reason that's the test is because we have rights in our existing registration. Under, you know, 1052D, the board is not supposed to allow anything to register that is confusingly similar to what we already have. And I think this test is designed to protect those rights in existing registrations, particularly incontestable registrations, like the five restaurant mark is here, as is the OTG mark, because you know they can, and that is baked into the strategic partners test. It's one of the elements in the TTAB cases talk about.
When five steak was registered, do we know whether the examiner considered five restaurant?
It was never cited, never came up.
It just never came up. The word cited, I guess, was, you know, in patent land, you cite a lot of things that you don't find to be a problem, but you cite them anyway on the face of the patent. So when you say it wasn't cited, I couldn't tell whether that meant it wasn't viewed as a ground, as a problem, or was not even recognized to exist.
So the record that we have doesn't show any indication that the examiner looked at the five restaurant mark and didn't consider it.
And then when the five steak application was published for opposition, did you seek to oppose the five steak mark?
They did not. Our client was unaware of it. They never
became aware. So you didn't seek to oppose it, nor did you seek to cancel it when you had the time to cancel it. Is that right?
That's true, and the reason is simply because they didn't know about it until it was already incontestable. And so the crux of the problem here, though, are the inconsistent results from the trademark office, where in 2009, apparently there was no likelihood of confusion between five restaurant and five steakhouse. And then now in 2016, all of a sudden, there is a likelihood of confusion between five steakhouse and five steak.
That does rest on the assumption that the trademark examining attorney was aware of five restaurant when it was examining and evaluating five steak.
Although I'm not really sure that the inquiry depends upon, you know, whether the examiner, you know, actually looked at it or not. I mean, the fact is it proceeded toward registration, and if it was likely to cause confusion with five restaurant, it shouldn't have, but it did.
Well, I think what you're arguing is that the agency is being arbitrary and capricious by allowing the five steak mark and now refusing to allow your five steakhouse mark. But that's why I'm saying that requires the agency to consciously understand and believe that five steak, when it had to decide whether to register it, is not confusingly similar to five restaurant. And if they just never found five restaurant and were unaware of it, then you can't necessarily say that the agency is acting arbitrarily and capriciously in its decision-making process of judging the relative confusion among all these different marks that have the word five in it.
Sure. So it's true that I don't know what was in the head of the examiner in 2009, but I do know what the board did in 2016 when it looked at the facts here, and it looked at the fact that the 2009 registration went through regardless of whether the examiner saw it or not, and didn't give that any weight when it issued its decision in this case, which it should have done. I mean, if you look at the strategic partners test that it said it would apply, this case checks all the boxes, and it should have proceeded toward registration based on that 13th factor. And that decision, I do know, you know, we have a written opinion on it. I know everything that went into that decision. That, I think, is arbitrary because it disregards what happened in 2009 when the only meaningful difference here, and it is just the swap of it, one generic term for another, is that restaurant turned into steakhouse. And
so the theory would be that even if confusion is likely, and I think it's hard to say that it's not, on this history, whatever reason, whether a mistake was made in the examination or for some other reason, on this history, you ought to be entitled to take this next step?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, yes. Because, again, they decided in 2009, or the effect of the decision.
If the trademark office was wrong one time around, then they're stuck, and now they need to be doubly wrong.
No, I wouldn't put it that way, Your Honor. The key, that I think, to this particular issue is our existing rights in our registered mark, which is incontestable, which protect our mark from registration of anything confusingly similar to it. And by deciding no likelihood of confusion in 2009, and then all of a sudden deciding there is a likelihood of confusion in 2016 when we've just swapped a generic for another generic and added the fork and knife, which makes the marks less similar, certainly not more similar.
Or at least if there were error, that and the applicant relied on the error and proceeded. One doesn't have to spend all one's time reading trademarks published for opposition, and so it was missed. But more likely than not, it certainly looks like error on the part of the office. And it does seem as if the public who is entitled to rely on it, that's a dilemma. But then, of course, the other side is, how about the rest of the public who, more likely than not, is not going to be able to tell these establishments apart.
So I do think the two marks are not confusingly similar, so I don't think there's going to be an issue with the public not being able to tell the two marks apart. And the trademark office, again, allowed in 2009 five stake to go through. There was no likelihood of confusion then. So switching restaurant to steakhouse doesn't create a likelihood of confusion. It's a generic component that should be given very, very little weight in the analysis. I mean, even thinking about the way the mark would get used, and it's also highly visual, which I think is very important. It was also not given enough weight by the trademark office. I mean, the St. John's mark is bold and very brush-stroked lettering that St. John's came up with on its own. The generic is in much smaller font at the bottom, whereas the OTG mark is in what looks like a standard font. It has color as a component of it. There's no design or other visual element to it. And even the director focuses somewhat on the vocalizable elements and in essence says, gee, doesn't five steakhouse sound like five steak when you say it? Which, number one, doesn't give enough weight to the visual, and number two, continues to overemphasize the generics. I mean, if you just step back for a minute and think about it,
What we have here is we have two marks. They both say five in the marks, and they both replace the letter F with the number five in the word five. And we have one that has that unusual spelling of five with five steak, and then we have another one with that same unusual spelling with five steakhouse. And we've also said that it's not unusual. In fact, it's fairly common to have the words of a mark be the predominant parts to analyze in the confusion analysis over any kind of stylization or design. And here, whatever design component there is, I think we can say it's on the less dominant side compared to the unusual spelling of the word five associated with steak or steakhouse. So I don't see why we can say that the trademark board lacked substantial evidence when it found that these two marks are highly similar. And so what's wrong in this particular instance for the trademark board to find that the unusual spelling of five associated with some version of the word steak is the dominant portion of the overall marks?
Right. So there's, first of all, there's no general rule on that in terms of the
Right.
Words being
and so we're in deference land now when we apply the general rule.
This does have to come back, though, to the legal error in the failure to apply the 13th factor, because there was no likelihood of confusion in 2009, and they both used five, the same five, in 2009 that they do in 2016.
One was for five restaurants.
True.
And the other one was for five states.
But if we're talking about now, gee, couldn't they have decided that the problem is one says five and the other one also says five? That was true in 2009, equally as it's true in 2016. And there was no likelihood of confusion then.
So I thought there was case law that says even if we can find what are arguable mistakes in the register, that doesn't mean that the trademark office is bound by those mistakes on the trademark register to continually make additional mistakes. And am I wrong about that?
So the trademark office is not, as they like to remind folks, often not bound by its prior decisions. And in their own manual, they say they're to be given no evidentiary value. But they do. I mean, we have plenty of decisions from the board cited in our briefing, the Allegiant Staffing case, Random Acts of Kindness case, the American Sale Training Association case, where they do, in fact, look at how they decided prior cases and say, you know what, under the 13th factor, it would be inconsistent or inequitable for us to decide differently than we have before and prejudicial to this applicant. And they have decided cases on that basis and should have done that here.
What's the relationship between what you said, I guess it's the MTEP and the cases that you are they just contradictory or?
I do think there's some contradiction there, because the manual says prior decisions are without evidentiary value, but there are decisions from the board where they do look at how they decided prior applications, particularly prior applications by the same party, and have said, you know, Legion staffing case, for example.
They look at prior written decisions about those, or just the mere fact of the registration?
Mere fact of the registration. So, I mean, if you look at the Allegiant staffing case, for example, there the applicant had a registered mark. A different party filed a whole bunch of other applications that went through and they got registrations. And then the original applicant, its mark lapsed by accident. It forgot to renew it. And then they reapplied and were refused on the basis of all those other ones that went through when their original registration was still valid. And the board said, well, wait a minute. If there was no likelihood of confusion when all of those other ones issued when you had your original registration, we can't now say you're blocked by all those people who we let through while you had a registration. And that would be, you know, that would be inequitable. And so they decided, nope, you actually do get to have your registration. So again, they're looking at the history of that party's marks and other marks being cited against it. And even when, you know, they go through all the other factors, and even when they have said, there might be a likelihood of confusion here, they can and have and should have done here said, we've got to look at the 13th DuPont factor and say, well, wait a minute, there's something else going on here. We need to let this one go through.
Let's hear from the office and we'll save you some rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Ms. Walker.
Good morning. May it please the court. The Patent and Trademark Office has a statutory mandate to refuse registration to a mark that so resembles a previously registered mark as to be likely to cause confusion. The PTO is required to give full effect to a previously registered mark, in this case, the five-stake mark. And that's particularly true here, where that registration is more than 5 years old.
There's no question that confusion is likely. But there is a very large question about the prior registration. Well, what's your response to the things that we've been talking about?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to be clear, first of all, that under the strategic partners analysis that the board applied, that the issue of substantial similarity is a question of fact. There is not a legal error here. There is not something that the board did that was legally wrong in applying strategic partners. And so my answer to that question is that the board considered strategic partners and considered whether appellant's previously registered five restaurant mark was substantially similar to its new mark for five.
I guess what I'm trying to understand about strategic partners is what is the substantive quality of the similarity that the Trademark Office and Trademark Board demands when it comes to a trademark applicant trying to piggyback on an earlier registration that it owns. So, and so substantial similarity, I mean, to me, that sounds kind of loose. I mean, if someone were to ask me, do I think Five Restaurant is confusingly similar with Five Steakhouse, its follow-on applied for mark, I'd say, yeah, they look pretty much the same to me. They look confusingly similar to me. They look like they would come from the same source. But what I'm guessing here is that the Trademark Board isn't thinking of its coined term substantial similarity in that particular way. I mean, to me, I would expect that if you're going to allow a trademark applicant to piggyback on some version that it got registered earlier, it would have to be a standard more like no colorable distinction between the two marks for you to say that you should be able to get the new mark. And so I'm trying to understand now, what does the Trademark Office think when it comes to the strategic partners inquiry?
Yes, Your Honor. And strategic partners itself applies a no meaningful difference test. And that is also the test that's incorporated into the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board and the one that was applied here. So the test is no meaningful difference. The office hasn't had much opportunity to apply that in other cases. So we don't have much directly applying strategic partners on that point. But we do have analogies both in the tacking context and in the Morehouse defense, which you referred to earlier. And in both of those cases, the standard is closer than it would be in, say, for a likelihood of confusion context. And so, and I think that the OM case that you referenced earlier is a good example where this court said that Olympic Kids was a different mark than Olympic, even though the relevant portion of the mark at issue was Olympic. So it is a tighter standard, a more narrow standard than the likelihood of confusion. And what the board found here as a factual matter is that where you have the second mark moving closer to the cited registration, that is a meaningful difference. That is something that the board has to consider when it is looking at whether or not the coexistence on the register of the Five Restaurant mark and the Five Steak mark is one that would tend to show that there's no likelihood of confusion. Because that ultimately is the relevant inquiry under strategic partners. Is there a factual evidence that suggests that there is actually no likelihood of confusion, even though the other factors point to likelihood of confusion? And it's the coexistence of more than 5 years that points to that no likelihood of confusion. And when you have a meaningful difference in the coexistence of the marks, you no longer have the relevant factual information that could suggest that there is no likelihood of confusion. If the court has no further questions.
Can I just ask at some fairly high level of generality, is there something that, I guess the St. John's can do? Is there some mechanism to go back and say to the PTO, you've got these two marks, you registered them both, apparently the second one without being aware of the first, there's a problem here, notwithstanding incontestability, this state of affairs should not stand? Or are we just stuck with this, you know, it's not the end of the world, so they can't use this particular modification of their earlier mark, but...
I mean, one of the things that they could have done here is they could have sought consent to register. That would have been an additional fact that we don't have here. Sort of short of that.
I'm sorry to elaborate what that.
Yeah, so a consent to register from, it wouldn't have been an additional fact. So a consent to registration from the owner of the Five Steak mark is something that says that the owner recognizes that there is no likelihood of confusion here. So that is an additional fact that the office will take into account when considering likelihood of confusion. That's
so
not
St. John's could have gone and asked the owner of Five Steak, will you consent to my doing this? And say the owner says no.
That then we don't have that additional evidence. But that is evidence that has been accepted by the office in the past as additional evidence.
You mean evidence, yes, would be accepted.
If they had said, sorry, if the owner of the five-stake mark had consented to registration, and the consent would say something like, we recognize that there is no likelihood of confusion between these two marks, and that would have gone into the record, that would have been additional evidence that the office would have considered in the likelihood of confusion analysis. But we don't have a consent.
That's very interesting because, as a question, because the likelihood of confusion standard is designed to protect the public, not the trademark owner. Well, of course, also the trademark owner, but it's designed to protect the public. So, in fact, if they wish to agree, I mean, we're just talking about registration. We're not talking about the right to use. If they agree, can each has nationwide exclusivity of an identical mark of unrelated entities, that this is something that the trademark office has no authority to object to?
It's not that they don't have an authority to object to. It's additional evidence. So it's not dispositive, just as evidence in any of these cases is not dispositive.
What do you mean by if there's no evidence? We're talking about, I was suggesting that these are substantially identical marks in terms of the words.
Yes, Your Honor. And the consent to registration that I was talking about is not something the office would consider that. So ultimately, the office would consider that as part of the likelihood of confusion.
But it wouldn't be bound to accept it.
That's right, Your Honor. Thank you.
Are you sure?
Yes, Your Honor.
The answer to that, I think that's very strange.
Right. I mean,
if that's the rule, if
the applied for mark here was five stake, and the cited registration against it was five stake, and then the two parties came to the trademark office and said, "Oh, don't worry about it, trademark office. We're gonna carve up everything on our own and go ahead and register the applied for five stake mark." There's no possible way the trademark office would go along with that, would it?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And typically,
it wouldn't.
No, okay. Well, but I can't. Right. But okay. Typically in those cases, typically in those cases, you have further restrictions, right? The parties would agree to further restrictions so that you don't have the two identical marks for the identical goods or services.
And they might even have corporate affiliations by then so that each benefits from the other's good marketing and they compete with each other.
That's easier. Maybe that's harder. To me, the real question is the identical, they're substantially identical marks, nationwide exclusivity, right to exclude, right to enforce. One of these days, who knows, they might somehow find some conflict. Well, all right, so is that the position of the office, that it may or may not have made a mistake, but now they can veto the reliance that apparently was placed on the mistake?
Well, I don't think that it's about a reliance on the mistake. It's about a valid subsisting trademark registration that the office cannot, in an ex parte context, challenge because it is a valid trademark registration. And, you know, to the extent that there was a concern about that registration, as Judge Chen pointed out, the applicant had both the opportunity to oppose and the opportunity for 5 years to cancel that registration. So there is a mechanism that the statute provides as a check.
There was a mechanism. But as far as you're aware, there currently is no mechanism.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Anything else for the?
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Okay, you have 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I do want to stress, so the error here was not in 2009 when the OTG mark went through. There is no likelihood of confusion between either of the St. John's marks and the OTG mark. The error was in 2016 when they should have done, they said they were going to apply the strategic partners test. And it's not just the case that they applied it and we don't like the outcome, and so now we're appealing. They said they would apply it, but they ran They didn't actually apply it. They ran the wrong test altogether. They were supposed to do a substantial similarity comparison between the two St. John's marks. They didn't do that. They did a comparison between the applied for mark.
Sorry, is that different from what Strategic Partners articulates in terms of no meaningful difference?
Right. So it's, if you read substantial partners.
I gather the government, I mean, sure. The no meaningful difference language is in Strategic Partners, and it's logically, sensible on its face to say whether there's a meaningful difference might actually depend on what this intervening mark looked like and whether the new one is closer to the intervening one. Why would that not legitimately go into assessing the meaningfulness now of the difference between applied for and prior mark,
right.
not the reference mark?
So I do think that runs the risk of doing exactly what happened here, which is they essentially repeated the first factor analysis just said, we've already found these two to be similar. We say, and then they just kind of parrot that again in the 13th factor analysis and you're done. But the whole point of it is to look at and protect and think about and consider the rights that the party has who applied for the new mark in their existing registration, particularly an incontestable registration. It's about those rights in a vacuum. It's not about those rights as compared to whatever the mark is that's being cited against it now. And I do, so substantially similar is also found in Strategic Partners. Sometimes they say meaningfully different. I do think the court has some leeway here if the court thinks the test ought to be something else. To my mind, whether the two marks create the same commercial impression makes an awful lot of sense. And you said so yourself, Judge Chen, that if you look at the two St. John's marks, they look pretty much the same. I think there's no doubt that they create the same commercial impression. Switching from restaurant to steakhouse doesn't change the commercial impression. I mean, you can look at the Detroit Athletic Company case from this court from last year for the point that using a generic term has no impact, or very, very little impact, if any, on what the commercial impression of the mark is. It should not matter whether it's Five Restaurant or Steakhouse or Tavern or Bistro or Eatery.
Any more questions? Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
This is taken under submission.